week on Earth study. We've felt that it's important to have Bible study and Earth study, that God is saying something to us through the Earth, and we have to listen to what the Earth says. And I want to begin by saying that I'm a retired college university professor that was so uninformed about this kind of material, even though I worked on the problems of energy during the 70s, that we planted 14,000 trees on a farm that seven families own, and I didn't even know that the significance of planting trees in terms of taking the carbon dioxide out of the air. It was just one more thing to do with our farm because the soil wasn't very good and nobody wanted to use it. And we had about 30 acres that were free, so we planted 14,000 trees, which now, you know, seems like a very intelligent, I can pretend it's a very intelligent thing to do. But I just want to say I'm kind of Johnny come lately. And the first thing that I want to say is that I think the Bible tells us, through the Bible, to listen to the earth. And I just want to read a couple of passages which have come to, I'm sure it supports what I wanted to, you know how we read the Bible, but nevertheless, it's in the Bible. And in Romans 1:20, we read, Paul writes, "Ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been made." He's talking about people who haven't grown up with the Old Testament or with the Bible. And he's saying there's no excuse. If you look at the things that have been made, you can discern God and God's intention. And so it is that we think, some of us, that you can discern God's intention for us. And God is saying something to us through the things that have been made. And just one more passage from Jeremiah. There are many passages, and incidentally, I have a treatment of this in some detail, which is in a folder on the cart in the catalog, where the library has the catalog. There's a folder there that says Earth Study. And most of the stuff I've been thinking about and writing about since I got here is there. And one of the papers is on the Bible and creation. So there's one passage from Jeremiah 3, 1 through 5. "If a man divorces his wife and she goes from him and becomes another man's wife, will he return to her? Would not the land be greatly polluted? You have played the harlot with many lovers, and would you return to me, says the Lord? Lift up your eyes to the bare heights and see where you have not been where have you not been lain with? By the wayside you have sat awaiting lovers. Like an Arab in the wilderness, you have polluted the land with your vile harlotry. Therefore, the showers have been withheld, and the spring rain has not come. Yet you have a harlot's brow, you refuse to be ashamed. Have you not just now called to me, my father, thou art the friend of my youth? Will he be angry forever? Will he be indignant to the end? Behold, you have spoken, but you have done all the evil that you could." Now, there's a lot of figurative language in here, as you can see. But the harlot is us, according to this interpretation. "And the rains will be withheld, and the globe will get warmer, and the soil and water will be polluted, and the air will not be breathable. And through that, I'm saying," God is speaking something. He's saying something to us. He's saying something about our lives. He's saying something about what we're doing. And therefore, we have decided, some of us, and others have kind of fallen in with it, that we would have Earth study, and we would try to listen to what the Earth is saying. And that's a little bit of a task. I mean, it takes a little bit of doing, but I think all of us are generally aware that the Earth is saying something to us. Yesterday we talked about water and what was happening to water. And the story is, I think, much more disastrous for us than Luann painted, personally. But then sometimes they say I'm a pessimistic optimist. At any rate, what do you know about global warming? What is global warming? Anybody? What do you understand by the term global warming?
Well, the average temperature would rise. It's just a few degrees. It makes a big difference. Cause melting.
And why is it rising? What is the phenomenon?
Oh, well, they call it the greenhouse effect. Is that what you mentioned?
The greenhouse effect. What is the greenhouse effect?
The heat's kind of held in.
Beg your pardon?
The heat's held in, isn't allowed to dissipate.
And why? What's the...
Holes in the ozone.
Beg your pardon?
Holes in the ozone.
Holes in the ozone. Holes in the ozone. What do holes in the ozone create?
Well, that's by the
inert gases. They create ultraviolet skin cancer and affect the eyes, cataracts, and immune system is affected by the ultraviolet rays that the ozone ordinarily keeps out. That's what we call the ozone depletion. But this, what's ultraviolet? What's the way it works? Yes.
The way greenhouse works, or
greenhouse works. What happens?
That our industrial culture uses so much energy, and one of the byproducts of the energy use, no matter how many scrubbers or exhaust systems you have, is carbon dioxide. It's just part of the chemical process of using oil or any fossil, any wood or anything. And that carbon dioxide.
Fossil, coal,
yeah.
Oil, gas.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with not having the right filters. You just produce carbon dioxide whenever you use that stuff.
And what does a carbon dioxide do?
It makes like a shield up in the atmosphere. It lets the sunlight in, and then when the sunlight bounces off the Earth, it gets trapped. Something about the change in wavelength.
They're changed wavelengths. They don't go through the
right.
carbon dioxide,
right.
so it creates a warming effect
right.
on the Earth.
Right, like a blanket.
Yeah. Is that kind of clear? Now, what else besides carbon dioxide causes this effect? Causes the greenhouse effect. There's several other gases. Carbon dioxide is about 50, some people say 50.
Talking about freon and that type of thing?
57. Freon has to do with the ozone depletion.
Yeah.
Other gases, well, methane and chlorofluorocarbons. The chlorofluorocarbons function to destroy the ozone, but they also function to keep in the heat, and nitrous oxide. And there are various estimates about how much each of these does for keeping in the heat. And the carbon dioxide is by far the largest culprit in keeping in the heat. And the others are methane, about 18%. Some say 18 to 25. There's chlorofluorocarbons, 12 to 14. Nitrous oxide. They agree on these two different analyses. 6. So that it's not only the carbon dioxide. So that these gases. cause warming? Is global warming a threat so far as you know? Is it a real threat? Is it predicted that there's going to be much global warming? In the reading, I'm just trying to see how much you already have read and know.
Just yes. A few degrees would be very significant.
Very significant.
In changing many things like ocean level, deserts, growing seasons. We know in the past a volcano's ash in the atmosphere in the 1800s changed the, for a year or two, the growing season in New England so much that they had hardly any crop, and many people actually moved in Maine. They thought it was perhaps permanent. It wasn't, but that's the effect of something up there that's different.
Anybody else have any feeling about what's happening? Is this something that you feel is crucial, or is it? What have you heard? What's in your mind?
There's a. have you read the book, The Reflections on the End of Nature?
Yeah. Kibben.
I only read the article that was in the New Yorker last September.
Well, that's what I read too.
Right, and that's really good. Really good information and a good sort of philosophical way of looking at it. And one of the scary things about it is that it will be a chain effect. It's something immediate in with our consumer habits and everything is that, well, we know that like 5 of the warmest years since we've had recorded temperatures in America were in the 1980s, and so we had record use of electricity because of air conditioners. So if we have a warmer climate here in America, we'll just turn up the air conditioner. So we'll use more energy, which will burn more coal and introduce more stuff into the atmosphere. Yeah. And that's why he talks about the end of nature, because our idea of nature, it's only an idea. What we have now is a human-shaped environment. We've introduced so much stuff into the atmosphere that there's no going back. Sort of the idea I got from that.
Yes, thesis stems from a developing position by many that nature kind of regulates itself, and it's an interacting, rhythmic regulation, so that we've interfered with that regulation of itself, and we have several videos on those who are talking about it and why they think this happens. And we've intervened now so that nature is no longer functioning as a kind of self-regulating mechanism to keep the processes going. Well, let me just give you a little bit of what I planned to do while I took a walk this morning with my wife. And she said, well, don't use all those graphs and stuff. So I called hers the feminine approach to this problem. Mine is the masculine. I want to lay it all out. At any rate, Sarah and I spent all the time all the way up to the Fulton Art Junction talking about what to do today. And thanks to her. At any rate, this first graph is the temperature and the carbon dioxide for 160,000 years. Do you know how they know this?
You can take ice cores at Antarctic.
And they go in the Antarctic and they drill down in, and the ice has captured molecules of air, and they analyze the air for the amount of carbon dioxide, and they can go down thousands and thousands of feet and get the deposits from thousands and thousands of years. And so this is what they come up with. And the first diagram is a little bit, but what it seems to indicate is that the amount of carbon dioxide and the temperature varies. There's a correlation, it goes up and down together.
I understand how they get the carbon dioxide level at different times, because they can trap gas. But how do they measure the temperature?
Well, they measure the temperature by studying deposits and the kinds of trees and the kinds of vegetation that would flourish in different climates. So when only trees that would flourish in north of Alaska or in the northern part of Canada have pollen, then they say it's very cold. And when other kinds of trees flourish, they make the inference that it's warmer. Anyway, you can see that there's a correlation. What I really want to leave with you is the fact that it's pretty well established that the temperature is dependent on the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now we know there's some other gases here, but on Mars, there's no carbon dioxide. On Venus, there's a lot of carbon dioxide, and it's what, 700-800 degrees on Venus. And then the next one simply shows it for a shorter period.
Could you just, Hal?
Yeah.
Just that first graph, it's temperature imposed over carbon dioxide level?
Right.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
What is to be?
There are two graphs there.
There are two graphs. One is the amount of carbon dioxide. Uh-huh. And it runs from about 180 to about 295, I think that peak is there, I figured out.
What's to be said about that peak at about 130,000 years ago? Is it known what would have made that situation?
The presence of carbon dioxide.
Yes, but what caused that?
What caused the carbon dioxide to be present at that point?
Yeah.
What caused it to? That's an issue. I have one hypothesis about that, but
couldn't blame it on modern man.
The hypothesis that's given out by one person who claims that the ice age is coming is that the glaciers bring down minerals, give the soil the capacity to grow vegetation, and the vegetation then grows as long as the minerals are present, and when the minerals leached out, go to the ocean, and they're used up, then the trees and the forest begin to weaken, and the bugs get in and destroy the trees. They begin to get old and dry, and they burn, and the vegetation is gone, and there's no more vegetation to use whatever carbon dioxide has been given off, so that there's no stuff to absorb. And his thesis is that the carbon dioxide that's given off then functions to warm, and particularly the equator. And the equator then, when it's warm, the oceans begin to give off moisture. The moisture begins to circulate because there's a big temperature differential between the equator and the pole, and the moisture is carried to the pole, deposited as snow and ice, and the ice age is brought on. And it creates itself. That is, the more ice you get, the more pressure on the center of the Earth, the more earthquakes there are, and the more volcanoes there are that push the molten center up, spewing forth more carbon dioxide to heat up. So this thesis is that instead of getting warmer, everybody agrees it's going to get warmer, but the effect of getting warmer in this way would be to cause eventual coldness because of the temperature differentials and the moisture being transferred to the poles. It's the only thesis I've heard. There are other theses that the Earth in its circulation goes from an ellipse to a circle, and so that there's more sun. But the counter argument is that that only causes about a half of 1% change in the amount of sun, and that is not an explanation. That's a very good question, a very good question. This is the only explanation I've run across yet for why. Well, there's this other one about the the curvature of the Earth's orbit. This is for the last, since 1850, and it shows the correlation between the temperature and carbon dioxide. One point, if I don't get anything else across today, is there is a correlation between the amount of carbon dioxide in the air, and we have to say now, and these other gases, since it's clear there weren't any of these other man-made gases in the past, it's a pure correlation between carbon dioxide. Now we have these other gases which are said to function the same way, but the chlorofluorocarbons clearly are what we created. The methane could have been present before, because it comes from the disintegration of organic material. At any rate,
Do you know the relative percent of these gases that is attributable to human activity in comparison to what would be cycling in and out of the atmosphere if we weren't doing what we're doing?
Well, I don't really. We get some indication of the biomass or ordinary plant life carbon release from a statement like this, that but see, now there's so much burning of the forest, so that a lot of this would be burning. What this is saying is that the carbon release is 1,659,000,000 tons from biomass, from the burning of forests, or from whatever whatever is released from forest plants. So that's the fossil fuels release about 5.5 billion tons. 1.659. So it's not only carbon, but it's the burning of the. And this gives you the sources, the chief sources. We're less than 0.5%. We're not even recorded for the North American continent in terms of its biomass release. But this gives you the breakdown of it. You see where it's happening. We're simply destroying the tropical forest, and they're giving off this carbon release. So it's not simply our problem. I mean, whoever gives it off, it affects the whole shebang, the whole universe, the whole planet. But if we can't stop the destruction of forests, we will be in trouble. And there's an article in the June 8th New York Times, which describes the fact that the release from these countries is much greater than they had previously estimated. Well, the second thing I want to kind of indicate is that CO2 in the stratosphere is increasing, and probably got these all messed up now. Well, go with this one. This is the prediction. The amount of increase that's going to take place. We're about at 325 now. 325 per million parts of carbon dioxide. And if there's a negative growth, in other words, if we can reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that is given off each year, it's possible for us to stay at somewhere here between 300 and 400. This is an analog. If we have the same emission that we have today, next year, and next year, and next year, the carbon dioxide is estimated to go up above 600 by 2100, you can see, around 500. Now, if it goes up at 1%, you can see where it goes. If it goes up at 2, you can see where it goes. If it goes at 3, and the present rate of growth in the use of carbon dioxide is 3%. 3% each year growth. So, if we got a 3% growth, we're off from that by what? By 2060. We're up three times what we have now. So that it's very hard to predict and to know whether these projections are valid. There are those who claim that the water vapor that's given off by the warming at the equator, particularly at the equator because there's more heat there, will cause the sun's rays to be stopped before they get to the earth and will act as a blanket the other way. The water vapor will do that. But and that's one of the arguments that's used by those who question the people who would prepare a document like this and make these estimates. But you get several different estimates that that give you the same kind of anticipation. This is in Jonathan Weiner, The Next 100 Years, which is a very interesting book. But the steepest curve, he says, shows what could happen if human beings go at faster and faster rates, which we saw before. And then the temperature in 100 years would be 30 degrees, he predicts. 30 degrees warmer in 100 years. The second curve says 15 degrees. Suppose the climate is 30 degrees. Suppose instead that human beings inject the same amount of carbon into the air next year as we did this year, and so on for the next 100 years. Same amount, 5.5, well, about 7.3 billion. Then this will be the curve. And then the temperature will increase by 2100, it is estimated, by 15 degrees. Suppose, however, the lowest curve might happen if we cut back. Suppose our species puts less and less carbon into the air each year. Of course, the question is how much less you put into the air. I say we should put in 80% less by 10 years from now. This decade, we should cut our carbon emissions in the world, well, in the United States and the Western developed nations by 80%. And keep a pretty constant rate in the rest of the world. The developed nations use about 70% of the, or are responsible for 70% of the carbon. So we have a much more bigger responsibility for reducing it. Any questions or comments or queries?
Some of the conflicts between producers of carbon dioxide and non-producers are, I think, are kind of interesting. For example, it's been noted that as undesirable as many people, or the concerns many people have about nuclear production of electricity, it may in fact produce significantly less of the problem than coal, than the same amount of electricity generated by coal. Is this the way you are hearing it too?
Right. The problem with nuclear, what's the problem with nuclear?
What do you do with the cores, is one thing. That's the immediate thing. If everything works right and nothing blows up, you still have this tremendous problem with each plant every year produces an amazing amount of these cores that have to be put somewhere, and that's a big problem.
I think the government has evaded this problem by not going ahead with a surface storage of these. They always go down to, well, let's put them deep in the ground or something, and that's where so many of these problems are.
That's what they say, but as I recall, Hanford hasn't gotten rid of its stuff yet. It's still sitting around the surface waiting for a decision. And I read the other day something about Yucca Valley, and all of, it was a kind of a negative article. Do you want to say what you read?
Well, just that they've been evaluating Yucca Valley site in Nevada for a while, and they thought the first evaluation that would be a safe storage site, with the most recent evaluations are that it's not, and so it's just really stuck now.
Well, as you say, Hanford, I worked there 36 years. In liquid form, and that's where it is because of lack of funding. They have the technology to put it into solidified form, and that's what I'm saying could be done on the relative surface. In other words, changing a liquid form to something that looks like obsidian, and I've seen this demonstration. That could be on the surface. Not 1,000 feet below the surface as some of these other proposals are. And for some reason, this has not been done due to political reasons or whatever.
So you think there's a technology to handle the problem of waste?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I have not read about the technology. And I haven't been reading more since September.
And when one evaluates nuclear and coal, you have to also count the lives lost in the coal mines as part of this, and the lives lost in mining the uranium. It's undesirable, but I think in the technology we know now, it may have to be seriously looked at as a source of electricity.
My suggestion is hydrogen for energy. And it's interesting that Peugeot and Renault just went in with the French government on a $200 million 7-year research project to find out what they can do to build cars that will use hydrogen. And it's obvious, it's clean. I mean, what do you get when you burn hydrogen? The only problem is the explosivity and transport. But it's clean, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I guess.
When you burn hydrogen, you get water. You get it for water, you split it. They say, let's put some big, big solar producers of solar voltaics in the deserts of the Southwest and create the hydrogen with solar energy.
That's the latest, there's an article in the Smithsonian and about this Luz project in the Mojave. They're a solar thermal production, and they've got it down to about 8 cents a unit, to where the electric companies are making electricity for 5 to 7. So they're within, they're getting that close, and they're selling it to Los Angeles, and they're usually selling it just during peak production times.
Of course, if we charge the power companies for the carbon emissions, I think we should have a carbon tax.
Yeah.
Anything that gives off carbon dioxide, if this is true, then anything that gives off carbon dioxide ought to pay dearly. And I think we ought to have a tax on gasoline, $2 or $3. I mean, You know, Sarah, I should supposed to make this statement for Sarah, that I think it ought to be declared a sin to buy a car that doesn't get at least 50 miles a gallon. And they're all kind of, you know, there are cars that do it. And I've got the list here. Now begin to think about what to do about all this. I mean, if it is true that we're going to have a lot more carbon dioxide, if we keep on at the present rate, that's the wrong thing. I don't think I've ever made a copy of that. Yeah. I'll have to do something else here. Yeah, here's one that's got a few of them on it. In production, this is, 88 publication, I think, 88. This is 88 State of the World, page 51. In production, Peugeot 205, gasoline 42 miles. Ford Escort 53, that's a decent. Honda City 53, and that's in the city. Suzuki Sprint 57. And then prototypes then, 71, 73, 85, 98. I read about a Volvo they've got, this must be the one, 71 or 73 in the city and 63 in the city and 81 on the road. It was a family car. But this other list.
How polluting are diesel engines?
I don't know. I don't know anything about the relative pollution.
All I know about Volvo is they're the only ones that really produced a car that didn't have emissions that were destructive, and nobody has encouraged anybody else to continue with it.
Here are.
That was the gasoline one.
And here's a list in case anybody's interested. I'd really be interested in somebody checking up on some of these cars and actually seeing whether you can buy them, whether or not you can buy them. Well, what are we going to do about all this stuff? I'm really interested in what you think we can do to reverse the trend toward warming. Or global warming, what we personally can do. I know that a lot of things have to be done by institutions, but what can we personally do?
Are you talking about individuals?
Individuals, yeah. What can you do? What are you doing? Let's start with what you are doing.
We can push on our legislators to do something about the business of slash burning in the forest areas, which is still done. It's not only causing this problem, but many people suffer from allergies, 400 or 500 miles away because of the way that the stuff goes up over the Cascades and come down on Eastern Washington.
What do they do, just cut and then burn all the rest of it this way?
It's all about reforesting a lot of places.
I think it ought to be illegal to cut a tree if you don't plant to.
There's a lot of planting going on, I'm told, but a lot of it is not very successful. They talk about the Grand Planter planting program, but how many of those survive? That's an understatement.
Yeah, you asked about what we're doing in our own lives. Well, I live in a city that has good public transportation, so I can ride my bike or use public transportation.
Well, we could encourage more public transportation, but I think that's going to be the toughest one of all.
I understand there's a big to-do in Puget Sound about transportation systems. So they really go
public. I
don't
know anything about this part of the
country. Los Angeles is trying to develop a public transportation system.
Why do you think that public transportation is a part of the problem? I mean, you get people to
people aren't wedded to their cars. And the transportation, I broke a wrist and couldn't drive, and I had to use public transportation to get around, and I tell you, it's tough.
Where part of the country?
I come from the Midwest. I live in the Quad Cities. They've got public transportation, but it is slow. It involves a lot of transferring, although they have gotten so that they coordinate things pretty well. At one time, that was not the case. But there's a business of, in the old days when you used the bus, you went downtown, you bought something, you had it sent. Now you have to carry it. The idea being you take it out, put it in the car trunk. You're not driving your car, you've got the problem of what to do with your baggage. I mean, it's, and then of course the bus lines, inner city bus lines are very limited and they're non-existent.
Well, I think one of
The ability to get anywhere by air, unless it's a major city or airport, there is no service. There's no bus service, there's no railroad service, and there's no air service.
Where we have a civilization that's built for cars.
Your private automobile or a hired car is about the only way to get from point A to point B.
I'm truly not prepared to state too much about this carbon dioxide thing. Well, when you made a statement a few minutes ago that you feel that if somebody cuts a tree now, they should plant two. What's happening out here in this great Northwest with this clear-cut forest lands where they go in, as I understand it, a company goes in and just wipes off thousands of acres of land of all vegetation. And as I understand it, they do nothing about it.
And the government
and
is letting them
here, you could. I was out here 5 years ago, and my brother took me up into the western part of the Cascades, and he was pointing out areas that was just barren land. That's clear now. And, you know, we talk about planting trees and so forth. I think it has to go deeper than that. And unfortunately, I think one of the basic problems is we, as human beings, aren't too concerned about what happens in the Midwest if you don't live there, or conversely, the Northwest or the western part of this country if you're not there. It's too big a problem for an individual human being.
But I think it
may be a problem, but I think it's got to go deeper. Think back 100 years ago. What kind of fuel did we use? The same thing you're using here at Olin Village. The gentleman was talking about cutting trees down to burn to keep the place warm and or to generate power. Now, is this consistent with what you're talking about?
Well, it's better to burn wood than it is to burn coal.
Well, yeah, but you don't have coal here.
But if
you had a coal mine out here, I'll bet you'd use it.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah, everything is theory.
I did want to, well, partly there's some things you can do. You know, I always say you can use a cloth handkerchief. My mother-in-law gave me a lot of them, and now I kept them. Now they're useful. You don't use Kleenex. I mean, it's a little thing. I mean, there are a whole lot of things. And I want to call your attention to a piece that's on the shelf as you go in the dining room on the left. You may have seen that shelf there. It's right under What in the World sign. And there are here 30 things. Oh no, there are 45 things you can do in response to the carbon dioxide problems. 45 things you can do. A couple of them involve you with legislators or something like that. But a lot of them are just things you can do.
But what can we do with the problem? One of your graphs, you showed Brazil as the highest generator of carbon dioxide. What can we in the United States do to even think about helping that problem.
Plenty. Anybody got an idea?
I know what some things that have been tried.
I mean, other than politics.
It has to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there are organizations which are giving money for in exchange for land that will be set aside and not.
Give Brazil money.
Mm-hmm. I mean, being forgiven in debt in exchange for setting aside.
That's certainly one proposal. We forgive the debt in exchange.
It's pretty much of a drop in the bucket.
But it could be a big thing if we, the U.S., forgave the debts. I mean, we're spending $500 billion to go to Mars. I read the other day. $500 billion to bail out the savings and loans. And it's not the fact we don't have the resources.
Part of that is greed. Part of this clear cutting is just plain old-fashioned greed, too.
Sure.
And so you fight them on that level. You know, it's not hard to find out what multinational corporations are involved in deforestation down there. And you write them and say, this is too bad. I used to buy your products, but I recently had my consciousness raised. And so until you get your act together,
well, a lot of those Japanese companies, and they don't really care what we think.
No, I think that it's international, and they do care. And you talk to people that work in public relations departments, any level corporation, and they'll tell you that each letter you write to somebody gets read and gets passed around and gets discussed. And they figure that every letter gets written represents so many people.
There's also an organization, I noticed they have the booklets about the companies, they rate the companies.
Shopping
there.
For a Better World.
Yeah.
That's a really good sort of thing. To have.
Well, let me just say a few words about what this warming will do, and then we'll come back to the subject. What will the warming do? What's the problem with the warming? If you just assume it's going to get a little bit warmer, say 5 degrees.
Change the vegetation, change everything. Amount of water available, and the location of it.
Yeah. And it'll change the sea level, and all kinds of predictions, anywhere from 2 to 10 feet sea level is going to rise.
Most of the world's population lives near the coast.
A third of the world's population lives near the coast.
You know, we have skirted this. I've never come up with part of this problem, but also because there's too darn many people in the world.
Well, that's a long subject.
Yes, it is, and it's not been brought up, and I just wonder if it's considered too sore a subject.
No, it's not too sore a subject. I've been working on it. I haven't written on it yet. But third world development, economic development is a part of it. I don't think there's any population problem. I think it's third world economic development. And I think a big part of third world economic problems are our problems. We have caused them. And it'll take a little bit of doing to go into the way in which we've caused them. I have a paper on that, and this paper on Earth Study on third world economic development and some of the things that are important. I did want to call your attention to recycling. If you recycle aluminum, you save 95% of the energy that's
breaking cans around for years.
That's involved. We can do all kinds of things with energy efficiency. We can save 30% of our electricity with energy efficiency, buying energy efficient appliances and keeping our refrigerators at certain temperatures. We can buy recycled paper. We can push our legislators to require that their offices use recycled paper. We got to create a demand so that we'll get the people. We got to create a demand for the recycled paper so that our paper. It says recycle all our Sunday newspapers, we'd save 500,000 trees every Sunday. 500,000 trees every Sunday.
Another aspect, have you ever noticed how a computer printed out waste paper?
Waste paper, of course.
It's incredible.
It's a real problem because it doesn't print. Unless you use it again, but ordinarily...
My good, you acquired just bales of this paper in a day.
This is printed, and of course a lot of it's waste. We recycle everything here. All the computer paper that's, you know, for some reason or other spewed out, we use...
I can't feel that the computer companies can't do something about it.
An immediate problem with that is that you can get computer paper that has recycled content in it, like maybe 50% recycled paper.
Still,
but the if you have a printer or a Xerox copying machine, they will cancel your service contract if they find you using recycled paper. This way it is in Chicago. So, and I imagine this way it is nationwide. So we need technology there. That recycled paper's got to be cleaner. It's got too much, you know, it lints off or whatever.
We've got one particular printer that we use the backside of printouts for. Things that we don't necessarily need to keep. We'll recycle the stuff that from other reports to this one printer and use double-sided. And would say it really saves a lot of paper. It saves us several hundred boxes a year, and the reason the company is so busy doing that is in the back pocket. It's got nothing to do with recycling, yeah. But it's economical.
At our school, we set up a recycling paper program, and we sell our paper that we collect, this letter quality paper. We collect that, and they haul it off for us and give us money for it. So anyone that's involved in any kind of institution like a university or a company. I mean, most companies are just big buildings producing paper nowadays. And so what you do is you put a box by everyone's desk and then a bigger container down the hallway and everyone can, and you get to learn to, you know, make your own memo paper out of what's laying there.
There's a lot of things you can do. We cut our waste paper here by about 80%. I'm beginning to recycle the colored and the white paper and the cardboard. And yes.
I was going to say, the other side of the computer is that I can keep a year's copy of my correspondence on one disk this big, so I don't have anything in the file. So I'm saving that. I admit, on the other side, it does use more, but it sure helps.
But if you recycle it, then it's
right.
Instead of just kept. Well, the other thing I'd like to say is that I really think this is an institutional problem. If we can't get our churches to establish task forces on the environment and call it care for the creation, it's really, and begin to work on this material, I found that I increasingly have this stuff so much in my soul that there's nothing I can do but think about it and work on it and begin to act on it. And I think we have to begin to get our people in our institution. And I've also written a document which kind of outlines some steps and gives some resources for churches. And that isn't available yet. I'm waiting to try to get approved. But if you want to sign up on that Holden Network sheet, right, same shelf where you can see the 50 simple things to do to save the earth and 50 simple things kids can do to save the earth, and you can get this for a quarter. This is really summarizing what those 50 simple things do. And there are all kinds of more complex books. I'd say The Green Consumer and Ourselves, Our Earth, or Our Earth, Ourselves, are books that combine somewhat analysis of the issue plus things you can do. The Green Consumer and Our Earth, Ourselves. They have the whole shebang so that you get what you would get in State of the World when they talked about my book, That State of the World, 1990. I'd say it's as important a book as you'll ever read. But if you want to get a kind of a limited vision or background of the problem, get Green Consumer or Ourselves, our Earth, Ourselves, and they will give you everything about the problem in a general way, and then what to do about it. Now this summary for a quarter gives you a pretty good idea of what to do about global warming, what to do about waste, what to do about the third world economy, what to do about water, what to do about ozone depletion. And those five issues, eventually I'll have about six or seven more issues treated the same way. And you can read the analysis. If you want a quick summary of what the issues are in that folder, and you can take the things out. There are about four or five pages at least on all these issues. But I appreciate your being here, and I think we have to attend to the earth. And I hope some of you will go back, if you haven't got a group in your church working on this, and you'll be the catalytic agent. I know that it will work in our church. And I know we can do this, and I know over a period of time, all kinds of practical things and political things and all kinds of things can emerge. But you have to attend to it. And I find that if you can start with some book that lays it out, and those of you who've had some knowledge can be the leaders for others and begin to work in your church so that it's an institutional thing. And eventually you make analysis of your church as a whole and what it could be doing as an institution. Then you push off, as you say, into your school and into your clubs and wherever you go, you push off and you do the same kind of analysis and the same kind of action. Just do it. You can start eating low on the food chain because you use all that energy, 15 times as much energy to get beef as it is to have corn. To eat the grain, 15 times as much energy. It's not something you can't do. There are enough things on here to give you a great joy. Because it's something you can do. My friend Bill just said, you know, I was walking along with my cloth bag. What did I need my cloth? Here it is. I had a full of these books. And I said to Scott, I said, here it is. For your groceries. No more paper bag, no more plastic bags. No more paper bags, few trees saved over a year. No more plastic bags, the garbage saved. The garbage disposal saved. There it is. Used in Europe for years and years and years and years and years and centuries, I guess. Went to Europe in 55, 62. Everybody used bag.
I was in Switzerland in November, and that's what they use all the time. Go to the store, and it's always
bags like that. I came out in 52 to this country, and I shop ever since with my bag. I was used to it in Germany.
It's a little
sure.
thing.
That's how they do it there.
So Bill said, you're smiling because you got a new thing you can do. And that's true. One little thing, friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Another little thing. So bless you all. Bless you all.
Thank you, God. It's your vegetables in your complex.
Thank you. That was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.